Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, like why, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show is available as a podcast, obviously. It's also available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you're being good to one another. And keep a mask in your back pocket just in case. We'll see. And hopefully you got to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And we will get to the grab a pencil portion of the show in a little bit. But I have company in the studio. Oh, Roger. We're not alone. And I'm going to let them verbally introduce themselves and why they're here. No, actually. And, of course, they are all a part of Indie Bard Fest, which we're going to get to in a little bit. So you will be familiar with their voices. You will love their voices. And then you will love to see them in real life. So we're going to start to pointing, which doesn't mean anything because it's on radio.
Glenn Dobbs, producer of Bard Fest.
Matt Hartsburg, actor in Bard Fest.
Afton Shepherd, actress in Bard's Fest.
In half of Bard Fest, actually, you are. So, and full disclosure, I've worked with all three of them in one way, shape, or form, whether it's directing or being directed by or having scotch and watching my performance of this midnight screening of The Room. Thank you, Matt. I know that. So, but before we get into the movies a little bit, so Glenn, just so we verify, Lear's Shadow is going to be a part of the Fringe Festival. That is right?
That's correct.
And, of course, that's where you two crazy kids are a part of. Do we have the date set for the performances of Lear's Shadow?
We do. And thank you for asking. And while I carefully
hot scrolling action here on Film Sociology, like I've never scrolled through the computer as the show was happening.
Oh. Like carefully look that up. Like on IndieBardFest.com.
You're listing the Film Sociology, a film pod. All right, 3 minutes in. We're already identifying the show.
All right.
Okay.
So here are the shows. August 20th at 7:30, August 22nd at 4:30 p.m., August 28th at 7:30 p.m., August 29th at 9 p.m., September 2nd at 7:30 p.m., and September 4th at 9 p.m.
Okay. And then, of course, soon after that is Indie Bard Fest with the launching of the Indie Bard Fest Prestige Project.
Exactly.
Everyone's favorite romantic comedy, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which will be at the Cat in Carmel in October. And, of course, the four shows at Indie Bard Fest, Anthony and Cleopatra. Hey, Cleo. Measure for Measure. The youth version of It's Not a Theater, So I Can Say Macbeth.
Love's Labor's Lost.
Love's Labor's Lost. Thank you. Not the Kenneth Branagh 40s Cole Porter version.
Unfortunately. But you know what? We'll make do. We'll make do the best we can.
They'll be singing and dancing in their own way. So.
That's right. In our own very special way.
That's right.
I have no doubt in my mind.
Just not as much Matthew Lillard. That's all. So anyway, IndieBardFest.org for all the information. And we'll break into that in a little bit.
.com.
Thank you. See, that's why he's here, among other things. So speaking of music, so it's been quite the week here at Film Sociology because if you listened to last week's Blues House Party, hope you do, but there were not one but two very, very fine music documentaries that came out on PBS on Tuesday. And starting out with, in his own words, Chuck Berry. And this is just a 1-hour documentary about the life of Chuck Berry and, of course, the
push of the title is a lot of quotes from Barry's past interviews and life experiences. And this is one that I've known a lot about Chuck Berry and his life and his career, all both ups and downs. You know, some of it is fodder for Morning Zoo Crew material, and we'll get to that. But there's a lot of new talking heads in this, including Keith Richards, musicians that he had played with, Marshall Chess, the son of Leonard Chess, I got that family tree right, yes. And not only that, but Barry's own kids and his wife. And this is the big one. I've never seen them interviewed before. And you see Chuck Berry's longtime widow. She wasn't a widow for long, but married to Chuck for long. Word choices are good. And at the library in St. Louis, checking out the Chuck Berry archives. And so there's that. There's a lot of archival footage of Berry being interviewed on the likes of The Tonight Show and the stories that go with it. And they don't really pull any punches as far as his jail time, whether it was taking an underage girl across state lines, tax problems, yeah, Afton shaking her head, yeah. And the one that certain folks are asking about, they do address the cameras in the restroom, but in one little headline montage near the end of the documentary. So I'm kind of impressed that they went there as much as they did. And also asking his wife about her husband's jail time for bringing an underage girl across state lines. So there's some juicy tidbit stuff, but there's also a lot of great music. So very impressed with, and Taylor Hackford, who said that, you know, the film director who had done everything from White Knights to An Officer and a Gentleman, and said that Chuck Berry was the biggest headache movie star he ever worked with. So it's a nice companion piece to Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, Taylor Hackford's documentary concert film from 1986. But doesn't pull any punches. So look for, in his own words, Chuck Berry. It's available on streaming, as well as American Masters' Buddy Guy. Mm. Today, at the time of this recording, happy birthday, Buddy Guy, 85 years old.
I love Buddy Guy.
Have you seen Buddy yet?
I have seen a couple of concerts, yeah.
Wow. Very cool. Yeah. And this
is about
is
the most charismatic guy on stage.
The first time I saw him was back when it was called Deer Creek, and it was there was a traveling blues festival. It was Buddy Guy, B.B. King, Dr. John, the Fabulous Thunderbirds, Duke Tomato, and Yank Rochelle. And that's a great outdoor event. And Buddy was this was like the largest venue I'd seen a blues show prior at that time. This is when I was in college in the early 90s. And he jumped off the stage. He had a wireless. Now, if you've been to a rock concert, you know generally what happens when that moment happens. Nobody went near Buddy.
Not one.
You think about the drunken lunatics that were at, oh, they're still at Roth. But you get that idea. But nobody,
they don't go home.
Nobody dared to touch him. It was electrifying. I was like, wow, that's power. I'm really impressed by that. Seriously, because all it takes is one, you've seen it, the one drunk dope that then becomes YouTube fodder or TikTok material. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, nobody dared touch him. And I wound up seeing Buddy probably a dozen times, and I'm going to get to that in a little bit. But this one, he is more open than he has been. I interviewed the guy once, and he's more vulnerable because he's 85, and he's also starting to show his age. This is one of those folks, I think, like Paul Newman, Terry Garr, Mary Lou Henner, where they didn't age for decades, but now it's starting to show. And because the last time I saw Buddy was at IU, gosh, it was with my buddy Martin. That was probably 5 or 6 years ago. So I'm used to seeing musicians in their 70s and 80s, but I'm sure he can still play. But just the sign of aging is, it's like when I saw Paul Newman in Mr. and Mrs. Bridge and Blaze, which is the late 80s, early 90s, I'm like, oh, he's a human being. He's actually growing older. So there's that aspect of it, but the fact that he talks about his childhood and he talks about some dreams he has had, as well as the mixture of his career and the music and his work with chess and his issues with chess. And there's a number of talking heads, lowercase t, lowercase h, talking about his influence as well as their blues philosophy. Everybody from Gary Clark Jr., there's some archival footage of Muddy Waters, Lightnin' Hopkins, John Mayer, Christone Kingfish, and the Clapton guy. But yeah, it's a really, really cool documentary. And it was just a fun evening to watch those back to back. So look for American Masters, Buddy Guy, as well as, in his own words, Chuck Berry.
Do you think it would have been cooler if the Talking Heads had interviewed Buddy Guy?
I'd like to see, that might be a fringe show of Buddy Guy and David Byrne.
I can't get that out of my head now, and that sounds exactly like something Fringe would do.
Maybe. And if David Byrne did it, I'd love if he would wire the entire building so the building would be an instrument. He actually did this with a building in New York once. And the thing about Buddy, I've seen Buddy probably, like I said, a dozen times at his own club, because he would do a month-long residency at his club Legends, kind of like what Eric Clapton would do at Royal Albert Hall. He did this for, and then eventually he reached an age where he's just going to do it on the weekends, which is fine. The thing about it is, I saw it probably 3 or 4 years in a row at Legends, and it's the same show. Same show every time. And since I've seen him at Chicago Blues Fest and IU and interviewed him at Jazz Fest, and it's the same show. Still a fun show, but don't go in expecting surprises. I think there was one time
in
Chicago.
He's earned.
Well, and there is that. I had the realization, and this took a lot of time because we're all learning. We're always in school, even if we're not in a classroom. I got to see him do one solo acoustic performance, and it wasn't even a full performance. And I would love to have seen more than that. At one time when he was at Legends, 1 week he would do a solo acoustic show. Another time he'd have, like Clapton, a trio. Another time he'd have a full band with horns and backup singers. And I kind of wish that variety was there. But I also realized, and it took me a long time to figure this out, he's not doing the show for the hipster D-bag who's seen him a dozen times. He's doing it for the much more number of folks who have never seen him before. Mm-hmm. And I left that train a long, long time ago. So they want to see the Stevie Ray Vaughan, Eric Clapton, Led Zeppelin medley. And it took me, and it wasn't until I interviewed him for Jazz Fest, and this was the year he played at Jazz Fest was the year Mother Nature was in a mood, and Mother Nature and Indie Jazz Fest have not had the best of relationships, and so there was fear that the entire festival was going to be canceled, and it was a Friday night. It rained in the morning, it rained in the early afternoon, and it stopped. Now, it was, kind of muddy, not Muddy Waters, but this was at Military Park. But they wound up doing the show, and about 3,000 people showed up, and Muddy did the show that everybody needed to see. So, lesson learned for the hipster D-bag who saw him a dozen times. So,
there's a great story about Prince.
Yes.
He's one of the few people that did a Super Bowl halftime show that was worth watching.
And great shadow, yeah. Speaking of shadows.
Yeah.
Guitar neck,
Well, he was told, hey, Prince, it's raining. Do you want to stop? And he, according to legend, he said, can you make it rain harder?
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. I could see that.
So. Can you make it purple, please?
I assumed you got this. I just was looking at the notes on it.
What's that?
The 50-year anniversary album of Alligator Records.
Yes, 50 years of genuine house rock and music heard on the other show on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
Do you have it?
I do.
Very good.
It's Give Me Back My Wig.
Story on that, that's Hound Dog Taylor. Yeah. When I got my first blues show at WCRD on the campus of the Ball State University. Stop that.
I have to.
No, you don't. You can say the Ball State University because I know that's their big campaign. That is not a math. That's not a motto that strikes fear into the hearts of your Mid-American Conference opponents.
Well,
birds are coming.
And I don't
it would
think
be better
it was
if you
to.
Had the birds, if either Alfred Hitchcock or Roger McGuinn attacking
sure.
Western Michigan. But anyway, this is back when CRD was only broadcasting in the dorms, late 80s technology, friends. But when I found out I was going to have a blues show, I went to Discount Den, and they had CDs for sale at that time. And their blues section was about the size of a bratwurst in a bun, and because it's radio. And I bought them out, basically. And one of the things I bought was the Alligator Records 20th Anniversary Collection. Two-disc, one-disc price. I thought I was getting away with highway robbery by getting two CDs for $10.
It's great music.
And this was the kind of the anchor for my blues show at college radio. The other great moment was I took that to a theater party, and disc one, track one, is Gimme Back My Wig by Hound Dog Taylor. And a cinematic moment happened that I never thought would happen. I put it on, and it's Hound Dog Taylor was just raw to the street. The guy made a $200 Japanese piece of crap guitar sound amazing, and with a slide. And he cracks into that song, and the party stopped and turned to the stereo and then looked at me and said, "Sosie, what did you bring?" And I got to lean up against the wall and go, "Hound Dog Taylor."
Yeah. So it's from where I work.
That's where the D-bag was born.
There you go. There
but
you
no, go. Yeah, Genuine House Rockin' Music, the 50th anniversary, is very, very good. So.
It is. Yeah.
So last week, my beloved stage manager, Missy, and I wound up having a concert road trip. We wound up going up to Ruoff to see the band Chicago, which I had never seen. And
without
Peter Cetera and his clenched jaw singing. Yeah, no, he's not been with the band for a while, and that's really okay. there's still three original members, and it was a fun show. I never thought I'd see them. Thank you, Missy. And, you know, hit after hit after hit. They did two sets with a 20-minute intermission, 2 hours and 10 minutes, just a lot of fun. And it was great because of a knucklehead of a certain age, not the biggest fan of their glossy 80s stuff, or to borrow a phrase from another radio station, crap rock for a busy world. there was too many times in my teenage years where I had been dejected or rejected, and I had to drive home, and, you know, "You're the Inspiration" is on the radio. Screw that noise. But I got to hear them by the Source, and it kind of exercised some of that a little bit. I bring this up not only to concert brag, but there is a really cool documentary that's streaming called The Terry Kath Experience. Terry Kath, of course, was one of the founding members and the guitarist of Chicago. And it was a documentary done by his daughter to learn more about her dad and his career. So this is how good a documentary it was. Peter Cetera and his jaw showed up for this one. There was a documentary. It's not available on streaming at the moment, I believe, called Now More Than Ever, The Story of Chicago. It was done by CNN. Guess who wasn't a part of that, who declined to be interviewed for that documentary. So anyway, if you're a fan of Chicago, check out the Terry Kath Experience.
I'm sure I saw them a few years ago.
Did
at
you?
The same venue, and Doobie's opened for them, which
oh
was
my
like
God.
The second or third time that I had seen them. And I imagine it's a similar case of we probably saw a very similar show, but again, those guys have earned it.
Hit after hit.
Oh,
after
yeah,
hit.
It doesn't stop.
Wasn't that one that they also jammed together at the end?
Perhaps.
It may have been, yeah.
Too much whiskey?
You know,
well, you know how it goes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Time.
Everybody can concert brag, but I have one that comes
get ready,
to mind. was, you know, when my wife and I were dating before the antibiotic era, we went to see Journey.
Okay.
And this is when Journey was just starting to become a big thing. And Bryan Adams was the opening act.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was just a great show. And so, you know, like everybody else in the world, I was a fan, and I bought their albums and enjoyed them as the years went by. So years go by, and I sort of forgot about it. And on the TV was, "Hey, Journey in concert."
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's been a lot of years. And so I look, and there's three band members I knew, and they were all my age. By the way, for a radio audience, I'm really old. So they're all
you're younger than Buddy Guy.
Knock
it off.
They're all my age. But then the Steve Perry, the lead singer, not the current guy that's doing it, the lead singer was like, "Wow, he looks amazing." It was this long hair and the thing, and he just, wow, he's really held up all these years, you know. And it was some lookalike that they had found that was like 22 years old.
Yeah.
And I was bringing my wife and go, look at Steve Perry.
And you're like, no, that's a hologram.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't give him any ideas.
You know the story with the current lead singer, right?
What, it was in a Journey tribute band.
He was in the Philippines.
Philippines, yeah.
And they saw him on a YouTube video, and it's amazing, his voice. Mm-hmm. You know, he's able to duplicate.
Yeah, saw him at the track a few years ago, and yeah, it's just what you picture. It's just what you see.
Yeah.
What you see is what you get.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it may not be, it's not Buddy Guy, but it was still pretty popular stuff at the time.
I understand that, absolutely. Yeah. Afton, you care to concert brag? Don't want you to feel left out.
Good, nope.
Perfect. All right, very good.
I veer clear of concerts a lot of times.
No, it's okay.
Crowds intimidate me.
Ah, that's okay. That's all right. It was this was my first time at Ruoff since Santana and Steve Winwood, so that's probably 5 years. And when Missy asked me to go along, I of course have 20th century concert habits. So I went to an ATM, got some cash, and Missy thought there was going to be no charge for parking. And I thought, well, that's insane. And I go, and she was right, because they add the parking into the ticket. And then I get to the box office to wait for her, and it's a cashless event. And I think they were doing this – I can't remember if they were doing this before COVID. I know they weren't when I saw Santana, but I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. So,
I think I told you this story before, but it'd been a few years since my wife and I had gone to a concert, and Bruce Springsteen was coming to town, and I'm a huge fan.
Bruce Springsteen.
No, this is before the Broadway things. And so I was a huge fan, and I thought, let's go to the concert. And she goes, yeah, okay. And I pick out my favorite T-shirt, you know. I got my best jeans on,
yes.
You know. And I'm thinking,
really
dress
it up
for
a night on
this is
the town.
This is, I'm going to, you know, rock on, you know, kind of thing. And everybody there is my age or older.
Yeah. Dad rock.
Dad rock.
Exactly.
Thank you. Yes, that's
exactly.
A thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Really
like, well.
But you see, the best part about it, though, the best part about it was my wife has a hearing problem. And so she went in and said, I'm hearing impaired. I said, oh, we have seats for you. And they moved us right up to like this front row
kind
of thing. And we're sitting there going, wow, I can see him sweat. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. Now, if they had somebody to do and I know they do concerts for the hearing impaired. They have somebody doing the show in sign language. So I'd love to see his monologues done in sign form.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right. The other thing was my imaginary garage band name is the Wooing Caucasians. They were at Ruoff in full force. At the Chicago concert.
Oh, my God.
You know they are. All right. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before I get to what's going on at the drive-ins, I guess I will ask my lovely trio involved with Bardfest and Lear Shadow and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and Antony and Cleopatra, if you're in the region. Have you had some new films to watch recently, or what have you watched this past week?
Well, I'll tell you something that I just finished a little bit ago. A few days ago. I am just enamored with that new McCartney documentary on Hulu.
Oh, yeah.
3-2-1.
3-2-1.
I got to get to that.
Is just scrumptious. Because
is it more than just like music nerds? You know?
That's kind of on its face like what it is about. It's two old guys on a soundboard and oh, that's the number one record we have done there.
My smarter two-thirds going to watch this?
Yes.
Okay, good.
So... It's some of it is like, okay, there's a story that he's told on stage before. There's a story that he told like 15 years ago, whatever. But when you get the guy in front of a board and then you just kind of let him play around because Rick Rubin has it all just broken down. Like, here are all these faders and you just like talk about just, oh, how did you get that sound for this? What was that choice? And it's another layer of talking about the music that I don't think he gets into very often, and you could tell he was just having a great time, and I was just eating it up.
It looks great.
Just eating it up with a soup ladle. It was absolutely spectacular.
Very cool. Very cool. Anybody else?
Well, you know, I have a little one, so my...
How many times have you had to watch that film in a row
weeks, absolutely.
Months?
Absolutely. No, my new... We've been watching Luca
yes,
lots and lots of
yes.
times in our house, and...
You know, I started to watch that. I didn't finish it. Is it pretty good?
Oh, you know, I personally think that Pixar just knows how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, they make a good film for both children and adults, and it just pulls at all the
story.
Pulls at all the emotions. Yeah.
So how many times have you watched it?
Three times. Three times.
Mm-hmm. And it's just getting started.
It's just getting started. We have Italian at least once a week just so that we can practice eating spaghetti so that just in case there happens to be a competition that we need to prepare for.
Oh, goodness.
Wow. Okay, so when you start telling the big night and La Dolce Vita, we'll work on that. When Emma was... 2, 3. I deem myself very, very fortunate because she had not only one but two films that she could watch every day for months, and she did. Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo.
Yeah. Yep.
You could do a hell of a lot worse than those two. So
you can. It had been a long time since I'd seen Monsters, Inc., and we just watched that one for the first time last week.
It does. Yeah. It does still hold up.
It's such an adorable show.
It is. So, you know, parents, do it. And okay, here's one after. Have you lied to your child about a film not being available or not seeing it? You will.
And I haven't. Yeah.
So here's my I've confessed this years later, but Emma really wanted to see Shark Tale. And I saw a press screening of it and it was god awful and I didn't tell her. And then, you know, a week later, she's like, can we go see Shark Tale? And I went, I think that movie's gone.
It's been 7 days.
Hey, some films have died very quickly.
Yes, they have.
So,
but she's like, not my Shark Tale. That can't be.
Yeah, that went away. Hey, look, here's more fish. Let's go back to Finding Nemo.
No.
That's fine. That's good. Yeah, okay. Oh, boy.
You know, speaking of that, you would probably get a kick out of that. There's a National Geographic documentary on a female diver that was very famous for filming with sharks.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, I've seen that because Shark Week and among other things.
But the cool thing about that thing is they were the consultants for the Jaws movie. And do you remember in the Jaws movie where Richard Dreyfuss goes into the thing and then a shark comes up and attacks the cage, and you have this very dramatic footage of the cage being thrown all over the place, and Dreyfuss dramatically goes down to the bottom of the water.
Mm-hmm.
That was done with a midget.
Yes.
They wanted to get the proportion right. They told Steven Spielberg, you know, there really aren't 20-foot great white sharks. They're about 13 feet. He says, I want it 20 feet. And so he had to get it in proportion.
You
so
know what,
it would
Spielberg?
Look like a
get a shark that works, all right?
And so they went in and filmed that bit, and that's their film that they gave to Spielberg. And the problem with it is they had no idea that it would lead to untold tens of thousands of sharks being killed.
There was that fear of sharks, the war on sharks in 1975.
I remember going to a lake as a kid, and I didn't want to get in the water because it scared me half to death. There was a shark under the water.
Long Beach Island, New Jersey, summer of 1975.
Well, that's where the movie was filmed.
No. That's up in in New Jersey. This you're talking about up in New England.
That's
this
true.
Is up in Massachusetts.
That's true.
Amityville, not that Amityville, the other Amityville. My whole family went to see it. I'm 5, scares the hell out of me. My grandfather, who I thought was Ernest Hemingway without the hole in the head, walked out of the movie. And then the next day, we go to the beach. And my father was a surgeon. My father's job was to help people and make them a fellow doctor, sir.
There you go.
And he picked me up over his head, hummed two notes, and walked me toward the water and scared the living hell out of me. But that was the power of film. I'm like, wow, a piece of celluloid did that. Now, I'm going to get to a fringe story involving Jaws, and then I'm going to get to your fringe story, segue.
Ooh.
So when the smart one, Mrs. Sosie, the one I love and call Lynn, when I was with Lynn and Earlham, and we had the Misadventures of Martin Hathaway done at the Edinburgh Festival in Scotland, one of my favorite fringe shows there was a three-person show called The Shark Is Not Working, and it's Roy Scheider, Robert Shaw, and Richard Dreyfuss on the set of Jaws talking while they're waiting for the shark to fix. If that wasn't geeky enough, the co-author of the script and the man playing Robert Shaw was Shaw's son.
Wow.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was like watching Yulee's Gold with Peter Fonda. It was like watching Jared Harris on Mad Men and go, oh, my God, there's your dad. Because old people say that. And so it's the three of them bickering, especially Shaw and Dreyfuss, because they didn't get along. And they use as kind of the end of each act of this one-act story of Shaw attempting to do the Indianapolis speech. So the first time, he's making fun of it. It's rubbish. Olivier couldn't make the sound good. Second try, he's drunk off his gourd, and he can't do it. And then once at the end of the play, it's the last day of shooting. The shark works. Let's go film. And then they actually recreate the moment of the Indianapolis speech. So fun stuff. Now, that was Fringe in Scotland. Let's go to Fringe in Indy. So Lear Shadow making its... Is it Fringe debut or Fringe return?
Fringe debut.
Debut. I know that it had been done.
In Bardfest.
At Bardfest. Okay. So who would like to share with the listeners the story of Lear's Shadow?
Gwen's looking at us, making sure that we've done our homework and read the script, of course.
Wow. Go for it.
Which we naturally have. You know, and
it's hard not to give it away.
Me not think the actor protests too much.
Lear Shadow is a really extraordinary tale. It came to us rather serendipity. We had a Bardfest show season a couple of years ago, almost 3 years ago now, and one of the shows had to drop out. And so I was looking for a replacement show, and I just made some calls, and I came across an iTunes movie called Lear Shadow. Watched it. I was amazed by it. I called around to try to find it. I couldn't find it anywhere. And finally got a hold of the author, Brian Eldring, in California. And he said, I'll be happy to send you the script. And he did. And you, of course, ended up interviewing him. And he's just a marvelous man. And sent us a lovely notes about this thing. Essentially, it's a story of an acclaimed theater director who arrives for a rehearsal at her Los Angeles studio, and something's wrong. Something's terribly wrong. Mm-hmm. But you don't quite know what it is. And she's met by Stephen and later Rachel in the show, where you begin to realize that she's holding a really terrible secret.
That's your doom.
The story involves the unfolding of that. And during the course of it, since it's a Shakespeare theater, the character Stephen, played by Matt, gets her to say, hey, you have this all memorized, right? You know, and it almost as a game gets her to start going through Lear. And it's a remarkably healing experience because their stories parallel with each other and the ending parallels with each other. And it's just, it's a stunning ending. People walk out of that thing with just mouths open saying, I did not see that coming. You know, with it. So, and it features a returning cast member who's not here today, the lovely Miss Nan Macy.
Martha.
Who who got the Outstanding Award for Acting for the performance by a local critic, Ken Klingemeyer, and just called larger than life, profoundly moving, just a huge, huge part. And she's returning to the title role.
Cool.
Yeah.
And of course, Nan and Afton will be working with me in October, and we'll get to that a little bit.
Yes.
And Afton, your role in this one.
Well, I play Rachel, and I am a friend of Steven's. I'm also a company actor in the studio, but I'm also Jackie's daughter. So that adds that little level of
parent
family drama.
Speaking of family drama, King Lear, of course. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. There's a little bit of arcing that you see in the show.
Cool. Well, then I think after when you guys do this, I think a double feature of Akira Kurosawa's Ron.
Yes.
And A Thousand Acres.
Yes.
Probably in that order. No, it might be the other way around.
Yeah,
you're right. So anyway. Make a note of those.
Homework, yes. I've never seen them.
It's not. Now, we've worked on it. It's not homework. It's fun. Does it help you in your performance?
Nah.
But watch it anyway.
One of the things, though, that's really extraordinary about the play is Matt, who plays the role of Stephen, and Matt has to play 9 different roles during the course of the show, and he just does a kind of theatric gymnastics that is just really a pleasure to watch.
It requires a lot of stretching. You'll see.
He's going to stretch during pre-show when house opens.
That's the whole. There's no curtain speech. It's just me stretching, and then we do it. Yeah, and we just
exactly
go. Lights
right
up.
Exactly
hey,
right.
Stranger things have happened in this city when it comes to theater stuff. So let me ask you guys, what is your history with King Lear before getting involved with Lear's Shadow?
Well, I had the pleasure of seeing Lear's Shadow previously in 2019.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes, when it was during Indie Bards Fest. Mm-hmm. And I definitely want to say that, like, it's amazing to see this rebirth that Nan has given to the role of Jackie and to King Lear, for that matter, with, you know, the different Stephen she has and the different Rachel. It's something that if you saw it the first time, you're going to be pleasantly surprised and in love and wowed.
Yes. I too saw it a couple years ago, and I was absolutely floored by the production. And so when Glenn kind of approached me with the opportunity, I was just cheesing. I couldn't believe it. I was like, yes, are you kidding? Unbelievable.
Isn't it fun to get approached by Glenn about a show?
It is.
No, seriously, and I'm not going to give it away. If you see me on the street, maybe I'll tell you. But to get it's kind of like Johnny Carson asking a comic to have a seat.
Well, that's a nice thing to say. I actually know what that reference is.
Yeah. Well, I know.
That's a nice thing to say.
See, after Johnny Carson, because you would be the matinee girl in our Fern sketch. She knows what that is. Yeah. But
no, but the thing is, I've had the pleasure of working with both of these actors in different productions, and they just have unusually broad range in their capabilities. They just have a huge talent. And as Afton pointed out, this particular incarnation of the show, although we have Nan back, we have really focused on a different aspect of it. And we've been, I think, on a journey of discovery about how we're able to find new nuances, new depths to this particular production. And it's when they're on all cylinders, it's riveting stuff.
Very good. And speaking of, so when and where will they be running on all cylinders for Lear Shadow?
Well, if one were to peruse their mobile device and find themselves on IndieBardFest.com,
like right now,
they might see that we will be performing at the Indie Fringe, the Basile stage.
That's correct.
For the duration
of
the festival.
That is right beside the beer garden.
Yes, so you have to love that.
Yes.
That's a draw in and of itself, and alcohol always makes for a very forgiving audience too. So these two things together, it's the perfect storm. Is what
you know,
it is.
If you go to for people interested in coming, if you go to indiebardfest.com, there is a heading that says Lear Shadow at the Fringe, and underneath that you can get tickets, you can get all the details, you can get Matthew's interview with Brian Elderling. We've posted that there.
Archives.
We have a promotional video from the original production, and there's all the show dates. Now, being Fringe, it's hard to say, you know, we run at this particular time, because Fringe has 30 productions, and they're at different times at different stations. But we'll have 6 shows spread over 3 weekends. And if you're a night owl, we have a 9 p.m. show. We have, a 4:30 show, don't we?
That sounds right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's great. And you can walk right out to the beer tent and just have a good time.
Absolutely. There you go. What they said.
Take all those emotions outside.
Exactly. Just take them outside.
Take all
there's no smoking in the theater. So it's Lear's Shadow. It's this fantastic production, but with the wonderful festival atmosphere that just comes with Indie Fringe and putting those things together, I could not be more thrilled about this.
It's going to be a fun end of summer.
It's going to be fun.
That's right. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. I got one other title to bring to you, and then we're going to find out what's been happening at the drive-ins and Historic Art Craft Theater, and then we'll grab a pencil and find out what you've been watching. Sometimes whatever is at the top of my watch movie pile just happens, and I'm really happy I got to experience this. There's a film called Man in the Moon, not the Milos Forman film about Andy Kaufman, but it's the last film from director Robert Mulligan, the man who gave us To Kill a Mockingbird, Summer of 42. It is also the film debut of Reese Witherspoon. This goes back to 1991. It's a beautiful coming-of-age story set in 1950s Louisiana. She's a 14-year-old girl with an older sister and feelings and emotions and, yeah, a little hormone, but not that much, come into play with a neighborhood boy. Tess Harper and Sam Waterston play the parents. He's not Atticus Finch. He doesn't have to be Atticus Finch. But it's a beautiful story, a coming of age, subtly told, subtly acted. And I think it kind of got lost a little bit since its release in 1991. But I have a physical copy of it because that's what I do. So anyway, look for Man on the Moon on video or streaming over at the Tibbs Drive-In. Oh, yeah, Disney's African Queen. Well, it's, you know, Jungle Cruise. That's on screen one and two. Last drive-in movie you attended.
Goodness. Okay, so...
Glenn's excited. He remembers his. Go ahead, Matt. You spoke first.
Well, and I did, and so I'm like, because I went with my girlfriend, Rachel, to go see... It was Halloween. It was spooky season.
Yes.
And they were playing just all the spooky things at Tibbs. And it was also my first time going to Tibbs. It was a wonderful experience. And I am absolutely blanking. And it's so bad because... And it was very spooky. I don't usually go in for horror movies, but I'm like, yes, right, dear, we will do this because, of course, we're going to do this. Okay. And I'm very enthusiastically... getting spooky for spooky season.
Glenn, you tell us yours while Matt tries to remember what spooky
film
we saw.
I'm going to text her like right now.
The best part about this was before either of these guys were born.
Yeah.
You know, that's how long ago.
Right.
This is back when you go to the drive-in and it had a big metal speaker that you hang on the window.
And they check. Well, they still check your trunk, but they actually look in your trunk.
They look in the trunk and going in. You go to the popcorn place and it was like a buck for a giant box popcorn.
Yeah,
But the best part, the best part, the best part was the Valley of Guanji. Now that's a deep cut.
Wow.
Do you know that?
I do. Yeah. Abdul probably has it on Blu-ray. Yeah. That's a while back.
It was a dinosaur movie. A bunch of cowboys go into this mysterious valley, and there's dinosaurs there. And it was all claymation dinosaurs.
It was the last of
the Harryhausen movies who did the stop action.
The restaurant in Monsters Inc.
Yeah, and it was there was a dinosaur. It was a really corny looking tyrannosaur ate a horse, mm-hmm. I was in love with it. I wanted to see it again and again and again.
Nice.
And we sat there and watched that.
Your pick, right?
No, it was my father's pick.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Cool.
He said, let's take the kids to the dinosaur movie.
They'll like that.
And it was so long ago that, you don't walk around with a memory of like Valley of Guanji.
It's more like 1 million years BC for me.
Oh, well, Raquel Welch, yeah. Yeah.
Afton, any drive-in experience?
Well, I have to applaud Tibbs Driving because it's just a wonderful facility. Mm-hmm. The first time I'd ever been there, I was actually on location shooting an independent film that has not been finished yet. Thanks, COVID. but it was actually Frozen 2.
Oh.
It was going on when we were there, so it was going on in the theater behind us. So
you hopefully didn't have to pixelate out the background visuals there.
They have it really nicely set up.
Okay,
it's like
right
there, and then it's our
because Disney has sharpshooters. If they go after you.
Oh yes, they do.
All right. So anyway, screen one at the Tibbs. Yes, you have Jungle Cruise. Screen two, Escape Room 2, and Space Jam. All right. Screen three. Okay, old. And here's a drive-in film for you, Stillwater.
Oh, yeah.
Mm, that's almost Abdul and I's idea of the art house drive-in movie theater.
Amanda
almost.
Knox is all upset thinking that they're making money off her for that.
Yes, there's that. And then screen four, The Green Knight and Snake Eyes.
You know, I don't know anything about The Green Knight, but it's got a lot of buzz. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it. I was too busy with Buddy Guy and Chuck Berry. So
that's tough, yeah.
It is tough. Now, of course, folks like Doug Powers and Brian Hartz are very excited for The Green Knight. It is not a Joseph Wambaugh novel.
Yeah, that's a deep cut.
I am very excited about that one, too.
Are you? Okay.
I'm very excited. Green Knight is one of my favorite King Arthur tales.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know
anything
about it.
Is there as much blood and genitals in this as there is Excalibur? That's a no.
No.
Can you do a Reader's Digest? What's the Green Knight about?
The Green Knight? Oh, well, it is a King Arthurian tale. Basically, a Green Knight comes to the court and challenges anyone to fight him. And a wee steward goes and chops off his head. Oh. He picks up his head.
All right,
and
we'll
he says, you have a year and you have to come and I get to return the favor. You come to my mountain and I get to repay the favor. So.
Oh, I see.
So it's bring me the head of Alfredo Garcia mm-hmm. in knight form.
Well, but I love Dev Patel.
Patel, yes.
Yeah, I think he's a fine actor. And I saw his movie David Copperfield.
Yes.
And
yes.
I enjoyed that. I thought mm-hmm. it was very good. It's a little Wes Anderson-y, but I thought it was really good.
Perfectly symmetrical.
Yeah. And it was the idea of seeing him in a movie like that looks great. But I just can't, from the previews, I just can't quite get a read on what's going on. But I don't have the...
You have the wonderful anticipation of this whole year where this... steward is preparing for his death, basically getting his head chopped off because he knows that the green giant is this magical creature because he's green.
Ho, ho, ho.
He's got all this, and he has a I don't want to ruin it, but he has a secret weapon.
Oh, I see.
That
I see.
Happens to be green.
Okay.
That he gets from a lovely lady.
Green. It's not easy.
So.
Ain't easy being green.
Nope. All right. Over at the Skyline Drive-In this weekend is Jungle Cruise and Black Widow, or as I like to call it, the adult version, not the grown-up version, of The Incredibles, family style. Enjoyed the family stuff. CG fighting is CG fighting. And yes, you do not have to watch the entire Marvel Universe to catch up on the story of Black Widow.
Oh, it was okay.
It was fine.
Yeah. How was the Jungle Cruise? I'm sure you saw that.
I have not seen Jungle Cruise. I watched The African Queen instead.
Oh, that's true.
But no, and kudos to Flo Pugh for getting that Marvel money. Go get that. So
I last saw her. Now, this is because I'm a Shakespeare geek. She was Cordelia. In the Anthony Hopkins King Lear.
Yes, very good.
Yeah.
Pretty good stuff there.
Yeah.
Next weekend at the Skyline, you have Jungle Cruise and Space Jam, and then Free Guy and Jungle Cruise the weekend of August 13th. All of that is at the Skyline Drive-In. Ooh. All right, this weekend at 2 and 7:30 p.m., depending on when you're listening to this, at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Twister.
No, that's a good movie.
Nice.
I saw that at a far too young age. My next door neighbor at the time.
Here I got this.
Yeah.
How old were you when you saw Twister?
Well, okay. So when did it come out?
1996.
It came out in 96. Okay. So I had to have been. I didn't see it in theaters.
I'm gonna
put an asterisk
there.
It
doesn't help. But
no, I. It was so. It must have been out on ye olde VHS at the time.
Yes.
And so my next door neighbor at the time, he and his family, they had just gotten this a surround sound put in their living room. It's like, hey, everyone, come over and watch this. And they're like, what's a great movie? Oh, let's watch Twister with a surround sound. It's going to be great. And so I saw this at God. I had to have been 6 or 7 years old, probably younger, maybe 5. And yeah, and Glenn is just devastated. And and that was just absolutely petrified of storms or just clouds passing over me for far too long after
and
that.
How old were you when you realized it's a disaster movie mixed with Cannonball Run?
28.
Okay, very
because
good.
That's me right now.
And once again, a guy wrote this because your ex-wife is Helen Hunt and your current beau is Jamie Gertz. So, way to go there. Anyway, 2 and 7:30 p.m. this weekend at the Art Craft Theater. Next Friday and Saturday, August 6th and 7th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Music Man.
He's a what?
He's a what? A film that makes you want to date Shirley Jones but go do shots with Mary Wicks. That is next weekend. And in Wednesday, August 11th, they are doing a free screening. Advanced ticket reservations are recommended. The 1953 drama Tokyo Story, Wednesday, August 11th at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. You're listening to the Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, friends, grab a pencil. It's that time of the show where we go to social media, hopefully used for good, not for evil, and we find out what films you have been watching, and will that inspire our panel of lovely guests? It's like, what's my line, only in color. We start on Twitter with Mass Ave Curmudgeon, who said, watch Bonfire of the Vanities, which was so awful on multiple levels, casting, writing, acting, that it's actually entertaining.
The book was amazing.
I'm going to take your word on that, Curmudgeon. I just don't have the wherewithal to watch that film again.
The book was incredible.
Yep. When Rolling Stone would air would print a chapter in every issue for a long, long stretch of time in the 80s. I'm not ready there yet. Our very own Lou Harry writes The Fugitive Kind, Jungle Cruise, O.C. and Stigs, and Summer of Soul. And if you've not seen Summer of Soul, friends, get on it. My favorite film so far this year. It's been quite the summer for music documentaries. And The Fugitive Kind, I think that's from Criterion, directed by Sidney Lumet, and that's Marlon Brando, Anna Magnani, and Joanne Woodward. Josh writes, I watched my replacement Blu-ray Criterion of Fear and Loathing sitting on my shelf. Oh, that's the other thing. Here's one for you, friends. I brought this up as a bonus question online because the film Joe Bell, the Mark Wahlberg film that just came out last week, which I referred to as an R-rated after-school special. And thank you. And I use that term because Ed Johnsonat, Sky Point to Ed, he first coined the phrase when reviewing the film Gran Torino. So if you can think of an R-rated after-school special, and I know you're starting to go through your Rolodexes right now, Creighton Duke writes, Scream for Help is like the sleaziest after-school special you've ever seen. I saw the trailer for this. I can't air it on the show. Yeah, it's directed by Michael Winner, who gave us the original Death Wish. It's the, is stepdad a sleazy killer, rapist person or not? And they stretch it out for 90 minutes. So thanks, Creighton Duke. Lisa writes, rewatch Green Lantern. Yeah, it was bad, but I don't think it was as awful as many do. Going to take your word on that one as well. Okay, that's not there. That's not there. All right, I think that's over on Twitter. Going to Facebook, we start with Dustin. Dustin always carries a heavy load here. Roberta from 1935, I Married an Angel from 1942, Chinatown, Broadcast News. Have you experienced Broadcast News, friends?
I have not.
Get on it.
Okay.
It is not only one of the best romantic comedies ever made, it's one of the best films from the 1980s.
Oh, it's high praise.
James L. Brooks, mm-hmm. William Hurt, Albert Brooks, Holly Hunter. It's films like this. If I were running things and perish that thought, Albert Brooks would be the guy making $20 million a picture. So great, great comedy, and still holds up about journalism as we know it. Back to Dustin's list, Field of Dreams, Pulp Fiction, Training Day, Antoine Fisher, the 40-year-old version, and Precious, based on the novel Push by Sapphire from 2009, as well as Argo.
That is a long week.
He's busy. Dustin doesn't sleep. He does not sleep. Our very own Alan Clow says he watched I Spit on Your Grave.
Alan?
Yeah, I'm kind of worried. So, Alan, if you're listening, are y'all
right? That's a deep cut.
That is what my buddy Austin refers to as a big trip to Bummerville. Yeah, Alan, hang in there, buddy. Hope you're doing okay. Mel writes Ghostbusters 1 and 2. I'm sorry, Ghostbusters 2, Ghostbusters 2016, and Pixels. We do not have an endorsement deal from Old Spice. Can you kill that, please? Jared writes, not a movie, but I enjoyed McCartney 321 on Hulu. It was fun to hear some of the music I love in new ways. Mm-hmm. Megan writes, The Trial of the Chicago 7. Thomas writes, finally saw In the Heights. In the Heights was the film that Emma and I broke the streak with.
Yep, I watched that one.
I'm not sure what that means.
First film in the theater.
First film in the theater, okay.
Because I didn't want it to be a remake, prequel, an origin story.
I really liked it. I thought it was great.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. So, well worth it. Chris writes, Chris Lloyd, Jungle Cruise, Green Knight, and Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, as well as Steps. Devin writes, Wall-E and You Again. Melissa writes, Jungle Cruise. Jeff also has a deep cut. I hope you don't remember, but there was a series of films in the 80s called Angel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
High schooler by day, prostitute by night. Just look up the trailer on YouTube at your leisure.
One of those.
They made three of these. This was on every video store shelf in the 80s. Yeah, let's put it this way. They made three of them, and I think they had three different actresses playing it in the other. Yeah, it's interchangeable. So, you all right there, Glenn?
No, I'm fine. I'm trying to remember. Is this the, it's not the Josh Whedon Angel.
No. This is high school student who's also a prostitute on Sunset Strip. Avenging Angel and then Angel 3, if I remember right. Yeah, I know these. Britt writes Pacific Rim Uprising, Thelma and Louise, Jolt, and Tom and Jerry. She has a daughter. Kevin writes Let Him Go from 2020. Josh writes Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, Tina, Synchronic, and Music Box's Woodstock 99. You said you saw Woodstock?
Yeah, that was... Ooh.
Didn't need a 99 Woodstock, did we?
No, it was... It was really a statement on future Trump supporters.
If you took a concert film and added The Purge,
oh, it was terrible. By day three, it was all young, very angry white college age boys,
bros,
and they were constantly throwing. There are legends up on that stage, and they're throwing bottles at them.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing they wanted to listen to was Korn and Limp Bizkit. And Limp Bizkit goes out and says, F things up and break everything. And so they start to do that. And there's like 50,000 people just going nuts. And by night three, they set fire to everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had so... all the toilets had overflowed, and they said, "We're playing in the mud."
That's not mud,
that's
friends.
That's not mud.
That's not good for your skin. Yeah, it's good for the dirt, not your skin.
It's not
it does
mud.
Not exfoliate.
And they were thinking that they're trying to duplicate the spirit of the original Woodstock, and none of these kids were born at the original Woodstock. They don't even know what the references mean.
Nah, more like the Rodney King verdict than Woodstock.
Oh,
yeah.
It's a
stunning unpleasant
thing. Yeah.
That parallels what I watched, but very differently. I watched the John Adams series on HBO all of last week. That kind of parallels it.
Really?
Sit down, John.
Really?
The John Adams to Woodstock pipeline. Here we go. Tell us all about it.
This is your pledge dollars at work right here. Way to go, Adam.
Let's talk about the Whiskey Rebellion.
Septic tank overflow. Yeah.
Afton came off the bench, nailed a three like Steph Curry and Robert Horry, and sits down.
No, that's
boom.
I actually am a huge fan of that show, and I read the book, too.
Me too.
It's amazing.
It's a good one.
There's a marvelous...
Not a movie.
Marvelous scene in the book. This is a true story. It's a marvelous scene in the book. If you go to the Capitol today and don't riot, and you walk into the rotunda, there's this beautiful picture of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And we've all seen it. It's just this classic picture. And it was painted during the lifetime of John Adams. And he was such a curmudgeon. They bring him in and they say, "Mr. Adams, look." And he goes, "Well, that's wrong. I wasn't standing there, and this person was over here. And why is he taller than I was? I'm taller than he was."
And then he got cast insane elsewhere.
It was just this marvelous human story. You know, it was just it was a great, great story.
He's like, "Who took this photo?"
Exactly. And then his daughter gets breast cancer, and they do a mastectomy in the upper floor of his house. Knowing enough about medicine to know what they did, it's just
it was Rush,
primitive.
Wasn't it?
It was Benjamin Rush.
Benjamin Rush, another founding father.
And he said, "I know of no cure but the knife."
Yep.
And
bet on a piece of leather and get that
that's
stuff done.
That's right.
Thank you for saying stuff, dear. Mm-hmm. All right, back to our list here. RJ writes 7 Years in Tibet and Christmas in the Clouds. Daniel writes, Tab Hunter Confidential, Evelyn Prentice, Wait Until Dark, Richmond Civic is doing Wait Until Dark in October, The Girls Most Likely to, Something Evil, a film with Sandy Dennis, and the original 1961, The Parent Trap. for you fans of Haley Mills.
I did the last. I did Wait Until Dark years ago.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you did. So did Emma. Scott writes Roadrunner, a film about Anthony Bourdain.
Ooh, I haven't seen that yet.
Excellent film. Excellent. Really? Yeah. It's you get a lot of footage I've not seen from Bourdain. The artificial intelligence computer voice is not as distracting as some folks on the interweb claim it is. Yeah. But it is. Of course, it ends with a gut punch of an ending with what happened. But then they end it Bourdain style. And so you know it's hard but uplifting at the same time. So Eric writes as far as rewatches. I love Eric because he does new and rewatches. Blood Simple, Night Moves, two new Criterions, my favorite film to watch on Halloween, Night of the Hunter with Robert Mitchum, and Straw Dogs from 1971, Sam Peckinpah's rough film. For him, most recent R-rated after-school special was Dangerous Minds from 1995. I wish all school teachers looked like Michelle Pfeiffer.
What's his name? The male lead in that one, and Dangerous Minds.
I'm trying to recall. Well, there was a subplot that was cut out of the film completely. The relationship between Pfeiffer and her boyfriend, played by Andy Garcia.
Okay.
So, okay. Brooke writes, "I took Olivia and her friend's sister to see Black Widow. They are 8 and 10. I love the movie, and maybe it's because I'm a grandma. I think it was a tad much for 8-year-olds." That's tough. My fault is it is a PG-13 movie. That's tough. But I would say, Brooke, you were there with them. They're going to probably see some, hopefully not see some worse stuff without you there. But there's a reason why you're there. So, you know, I took my kid to see, well, she saw way more Shakespeare than most grown-ups. Yes, you're chuckling because you know the stories. But, yeah, they're going to be fine. They're going to be a lot. They're going to be okay. Our very own Brian Hartz, the ultimate R-rated after-school special, Requiem for a Dream. Darren, here's what happens when you get hooked on drugs, kids. Yeah, that's that's the Darren Aronofsky film. That's a rough watch, gang. Or as Mr. Mackey once said, drugs are bad. So Greg writes Rear Window, Vertigo, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, Sky Point, the Diana Rigg, You'll Only Live Twice, Let Him Go, and Casino.
Had a bond week.
I know. Very good there. David writes Gunpowder Milkshake, Woodstock 99, Step Brothers, Finish McCartney 1-2-3, and Ash versus Evil Dead. Judy writes Up in the Air and An American Rhapsody. Carrie writes Jaws, Jaws 2, and Max Dugan Returns. God, why would you watch Jaws 2? Oof.
The Jawsening.
More two Jaws, two chompy. I don't know.
Still Waters. Isn't Still Waters supposed to be the best beach movie since Jaws, the beach horror movie? I saw that in a trailer.
I think Frankie and Annette's beach movies were better than that one, but yeah, maybe. Or 10. 10's a better beach movie.
Maybe prepping for that.
JR writes Woodstock 99. Patty writes The Adventures of Robin Hood and Law and Disorder from 1958. Doug writes Sweethearts from 1938, G.I. Blues from 1960, 60s Elvis movies, Jumbo from 1962, The Trial, Kid Galahad, The Parallax View from 1974, which I just recently revisited because a certain bookstore had a certain 50% off sale. Thank you. And if you want your paranoia thrillers from the 70s, that's up there. And All Disgraced Journalists Should Look Like Warren Beatty. Pretty in Pink from 1986, A Weekend at Bernie's, wow, Mirror Has Two Faces, and still watching 1962 films, as you said. Thank you, Doug. Kate writes the Fear Street trilogy. Dan writes The Big Lebowski. We might have to watch that when we're done with Virginia Woolf. Just saying. Stephanie writes Roadrunner. Chad writes, oh, my goodness, 1986's Transformers the movie. I think Glenn knows the big footnote on this picture.
No, I don't.
Orson Welles' last film.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, did some voice on that. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's – or as Chad writes, Orson Welles, Eric Idle, Leonard Nimoy, Judd Nelson, Peter Cullen, Casey Kasem, Frank Welker – it boggles the mind.
What voice was Casey Kasem's?
I don't know. Shaggy. Who? What else would he be? Eric Bryant writes The Elephant Man. Tommy writes The Duelist. That's Ridley Scott's directing debut with Harvey Keitel and Keith Carradine. Excellent stuff there. Nancy writes Steel Magnolias, I Still Cry Every Time, Smokey and the Bandit, and Guarding Tess. Todd writes Godzilla, Tokyo SOS, as well as Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. Was that the double bill at your the Guanji there, Glenn?
No, I just purchased a Godzilla shirt, and my wife hates it. But
it's exquisite. We don't know why. But.
Is it a work shirt now?
Oh yeah,
it's a work and play shirt.
I'll be wearing it to Fringe.
Will you get the Godzilla box set on Criterion?
Oh, I would hope so.
Okay, it's available. Evan Dossie, of course, has talked about it on this very program. Howell writes Summer of Soul. Jamie writes Fear Street. Joe writes the George Washington miniseries from 1984. Another 48 Hours. Ooh. Born Identity. Welcome to Marwin, also known as, you know, that other Steve Carell movie that's really sad. Armageddon from 1998 and Lucy from 2014. Our very own Tony Armstrong writes In a Lonely Place because Gloria Graham is in it. Thank you, Tony. Jeff writes A Dog's Way Home. Monica Hartz also chimes in, R-rated after school special, Requiem for a Dream. Cassie writes Uncle Frank. Robert Muggy writes Born Yesterday, It Should Happen to You, The Marrying Kind, Bells Are Ringing, and also revisited Blood Simple, Night Moves, and showed my wife Death Takes a Holiday. And he goes, I don't think I've ever watched a so-called after-school special, though I do remember when they were a thing. They were a thing. Sean writes Saturday Night Fever and the 1932 Scarface. Shout out to everybody doing Saturday Night Fever at Civic. Mm-hmm. I've never seen the musical. I'm curious about this. Does the musical make Tony Manero less of a loathsome bag? Never forget, John Travolta's character, it's a great performance, miserable human being.
Sure.
Just saying. Jessica writes The Awful Truth, Every Time We Say Goodbye, and Chef. Fine food porn.
Oh, I love Chef.
I do too. It's Jon Favreau's best film. I know what else he's directed. And I love that, obviously, a guy wrote it because his ex-wife is played by Sofia Vergara and his girlfriend, Scarlett Johansson. But the grilled cheese is still the best dish. Mm. Dev writes Fellowship of the Ring and Two Towers. Mm. It's still ending. Still ending. Yep. Taylor writes Cause for Alarm with Loretta Young, The Heavenly Lady with Hedley Lamarr. That's Hedy.
Hedley, it's Hedley.
That's thank you. Modern Miss Fisher Mysteries, Casablanca, Dan in Real Life, and 200 Motels for you fans of Frank Zappa. Alan writes Gunpowder Milkshake, Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
The third.
Third.
Yeah, was the best.
In case you missed the subtle nuances. Yeah. Well, there's, I believe, a Dawkins song in the third one. Yeah. The original Scream, the 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers, great last moment with Donald Sutherland.
And Frozen.
And Hellraiser. So there's that.
Wow.
Yeah, that's.
Get some therapy.
No, Alan's fine. Alan's fine. He's a regular contributor here. If you're a regular contributor, you can't be all bad. Gary writes Carnival of Souls, The Love Witch, The Black Six. Oh my gosh. The Black Gestapo, Charles Robinson. Kentucky Fried Movie. I love the Kentucky Fried Movie. Les Mis, 2019. Isle of Dogs. Horsehead, Grown Ups, G.I. Joe Origins, Snake Eyes, and Nobody. Oof. Jackie writes, I'm binging Downton Abbey this week. Thank you. Mary writes, the original Halloween. After 4th of July, it's full-blown Halloween season.
That sounds about right.
There are certain, well, all the fireworks stores turn into Halloween stores immediately. J.D. writes, Full Metal Jacket, Eraserhead, Friday, and Do the Right Thing.
J.B. Scoble?
J.D. Sams.
Okay, Sams.
No, I will let you know if J.B. chimes in. Sam writes Old, American Teen, and Miracle Mile. Diana writes, I'm in Michigan, so The Big Chill, a film that should be watched every 5 years, says the guy from Michigan. Terry writes, Eyes of Laura Mars, Days of Being Wild, and Bad Day at Black Rock, as well as Sun Don't Shine, The Blue Dahlia. And Terry thinks Boys in the Hood qualifies as an R-rated after-school special. Although, do you know Bad Day at Black Rock?
I do not.
It is I believe it's John Sturges' film, but a judo chopping Spencer Tracy coming in the town, cleaning up with like small town corruption with the likes of Robert Ryan, Ernest Borgnine, and Anne Francis, if I remember correctly. But yeah, to watch Spencer Tracy do judo.
That sounds delightful.
It is. So grab a pizza and a few beers and dig into that. That's a fun one. Cher writes, I watched Loving Vincent, a film animated by 100 artists in the painting style of Van Gogh. Mm-hmm. It's a historical novella that questions whether Vincent committed suicide or was fatally injured by another. It's mesmerizing as well as interesting. And I'm trying to remember, there is an Indiana link to this. I can't remember what it is right now. Speaking of Florence Pugh, Abby writes Midsummer. Not that Midsummer, this Midsummer. Definitely not worth the 2.5 hours. I disagree with you, Abby. Slow and terrible story that was very disjointed. It's a fine film about getting dumped by your boyfriend. It just so happens that it's set in a Swedish cult.
Sure.
With a little bit of Wicker Man. Right. The good Wicker Man, not the bad Wicker
Man. For all intents and purposes, a romantic comedy through and through.
Just like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because, if Heredity wasn't enough for you, Midsummer. So, mm-hmm. No, I actually enjoy that film. RJ writes The Last Vermeer. Kim writes Back to Burgundy. Mario writes North by Northwest, Hoosiers, and Roman Holiday. Pamela writes Flashdance. Jose writes Pig, for you Nicolas Cage fans out there. Lisa writes Milkwater. And Spencer, finally, he wraps things up with Shawshank Redemption, The Cook, The Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover. So there you go, friends. There's a myriad of titles for you to choose from. So hopefully you found something there that you liked. Now, friends, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Hopefully you get to fall back on some new old titles, old favorites, as well as discovering new films, or at least new to you. Let's get the info for Lear Shadow once more, which is happening, of course, at Fringe.
Yes, Indie Fringe is the place to be. Lear Shadow is the show to see at the Basile stage, I believe. Is what they call it. What?
Nobody drop any beats for this guy. DJ such and such.
I was just so moved. I was inspired. What can I say?
You didn't know.
This show is not to be missed. I am thrilled to be a part of this cast under Glenn's wonderful direction. Nan and Afton are outrageously wonderful talents. I'm just keeping up, and I really hope you all will come come see this very just delicious and heartbreaking production.
Yes, please go to www.indiebardfest.com. Check us out.
Yeah, I want to make a shout out to both of these guys. They're also in other productions of Bardfest.
Yes, they are.
Matt goes on to be one of the leads in Love, Labor's Lost, yes. A production that's not often done.
Correct.
It's a romantic comedy where four men decide that they're going to become just stoic and
men.
Learned and men and
manly men. And then the ladies show up.
And then they said the answer to all this is we must forego women. And then
except for these women.
Of course, four beautiful women move in next door and then hilarity ensues.
It's a Shakespearean version of
Exactly. Yeah. And then Afton is working hard. She will be the lead in Antony and Cleopatra.
Jones.
She'll be playing Cleopatra.
And, it is Shakespeare's female Falstaff. Thank you.
Oh, really? Yeah. You want to go beer for beer, honey? You want to do that? We can. Now, you might beat me in brandy, but I'll beat you in beer. Never mix, never worry.
And Afton can comment on the story, but I think it's a geopolitical romance, but it's mostly the romance and the tragedy between these two people with a beautiful story. And of an interesting note, several people auditioned to be Antony, and who ended up becoming Antony?
My husband.
There you go.
Darren Reinhardt.
Costumes and role-playing.
Yeah.
And so, of course, and as soon as she's done with, well,
Astrid came into rehearsal the other night, and she goes something I don't remember what it all was, but she says, "You know, Darren didn't do this, and Darren didn't do that." I kept thinking, "Oh, this is going to be a wonderful idea."
Honey, could you pass the beats like you passed that line he gave me last night? and of course, Afton and I will be working together in "Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?"
Yes, right. the Prestige Project.
But one thing, go ahead.
Kicks
please.
Off Bard's Fest.
That's right.
You can catch that at
a year and a half in the making.
Yeah, but it's going to be worth the wait.
Definitely
worth the wait.
Yes, Glenn.
One of the things I want to point out, because you guys won't say it as part of the Prestige Project, is we wanted to do something special that was adjacent to already the good work that we were doing.
Right.
And so we thought, what if we could set up a situation where we could get a theater and a director of noted ability and four actors that could really just hit it out of the ballpark.
But they got me
instead. And then what if we gave them a piece of material that was challenging not only to the audience, but also to the actors as well. And then what if we just wrapped all it around? And the conclusion was that would be prestigious indeed, and that became the Prestige Project. And so we are launching this, and this is our first one. Next year we already have a very good director and going to do a Tennessee Williams project.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just wonderful things happening at Bard Fest. And then this year, we've got a youth production of Macbeth by Dr. Kathy Phipps.
You said it.
Which has, I don't know how many kids in it. It's just amazing.
I think there's 33 witches in this production.
Yeah, exactly. And we also have, let's see, did I cover all of them? Love, Liberty, Lost, Antony, Cleopatra. A Measure for Measure.
Measure for Measure.
My goodness.
That's another one not always done.
Measure for Measure, which is a devastating show that really highlights the Me Too movement and about a woman wrongfully accused of a moral crime that she did not commit. And Shakespeare, in his usual masterful way, talks about a subject 400 years ago that's still relevant today.
Yep.
And it's under the direction of Paige Scott, who used to be the artistic director of Eclectic Pond.
Hey, Paige.
And she also is a frequent contributor to the Phoenix Theater.
Yep.
And we're wonderfully, we've got her here. And it's got a great cast, and they're at the Basile Theater as well. So, and then finally, we have Elizabeth Rex coming to Theater at the Fort, one of our new venues, which imagines
newly renovated theater.
Exactly.
Yes, gorgeous.
And imagines what would happen if Queen Elizabeth showed up to your party. And
hilarity ensues.
Yeah, hilarity ensues. And this is Queen Elizabeth I, not Queen Elizabeth II. And
they all can't look like Helen Mirren.
Yeah, and we have
Kate Blanchett.
We have an extraordinary cast for that, and so we're very excited. So again, as Afton pointed out, indiebardfest.com is where you'll find all about it. We're the largest Shakespeare festival in Indiana, and we're just growing every year.
That's right. So, gang, thanks for hanging out.
You bet.
Thank you
for having
us.
And Matt had to take off. Take care, pal. Anyway, go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there, and there's also some theater too. Just be cool to one another. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!